anything on this matter. It can be any quantum state. So basically, we want to see the pattern of entanglement encoded in a given state, but how do we do that? So there will be an interesting or quantity to kind of nicely characterize the entanglement included in a given state, that is the entropy of the entanglement. So to define the entanglement entropy, we first artificially by partition the total Hilbert space. So the Hilbert space now is decomposed into Hilbert space A and Hilbert space B. And up to this point, partition is quite arbitrary, but when applying this idea to condensed matter, I want to specify how we partition the Hilbert space. But up to this point, we just divide my system into two parts. Now, take a quantum state, psi, and I want to see the entanglement in this state.
So how do we do that? Okay, take the density matrix defined by this ground state state, and take the trace over the degrees of freedom included in the Hilbert space B. So originally, my state is in the pure state. My density matrix is in a pure state. But if I take the partial trace, now the density matrix defined for the subsystem A is now in the mixed state. So now it includes many terms in the expansion, which is called the Schmidt decomposition. It includes many terms. Now the entanglement entropy is simply defined by the entropy for this partition. So it's a trace of low A log of low A. That is the definition of entanglement entropy. It turns out it's also interesting to look at these numbers somewhat more accurately. So there's also something called entropy spectrum, which is defined by basically this partition where I take a log of this one, but basically this partition defines the spectrum of the entanglement entropy. So we want to look at the distribution of this number. So before looking for more complicated systems, let me first give a very simple example. So just take two qubits, two spins, and compare these two states. So which one is more entangled in some sense? Well, one say this is just a product state, but this one is a sum superposition of two states. And entanglement entropy clearly distinguishes these two states in a sense that entropy for this state is non-zero, but entropy for this state is zero. So that is a simple example. And we want to apply this quantity for condensed matter physics. Now, for condensed matter physics, the first question we want to ask is, what is a way to bipartition the total Hilbert space? Always, the condensed matter system is defined on a given manifold in given spatial dimensions. So it is very natural in terms of locality that we bipartition the system in terms of the geometry. So I take some region and I define this region as A, and I bipartition my Hilbert space into the Hilbert space supporting degrees of freedom in this region and its complement. And what I will try to do is to see the size dependence of entropy of the size of the region A, or shape dependence of the entanglement entropy. So since I already described the motivation for applying entanglement entropy in the first day of my mini course, I don't want to spend too much time here. But basically, we have many types of different wave function in condensed matter. Some of them is difficult to characterize in terms of symmetry breaking. Here, I have a near state, which is a kind of magnetically ordered state. And there, luckily, each spins are basically taking a spatial pattern like this. And this is like a product state. So that's not particularly entangled. On the other hand, as we go on, we see more different states. This is the another state, which is the variance from toric, where I have many singlets in a wave function. So we have many singlets. So one would say this is more entangled than this state. But it turns out this is not so much entangled in a sense that this is the product state. If you want to bipartition your system from here to here, there's basically no correlation between this region and this region. So it's a straight product state if you choose your boundary problem. Of course, there's more interesting state in condensed matter, which is a liquid state of spins or liquid states of variance bond. Variance bond is just this one singlet. So quite generally, your wave function has many terms in terms of singlets. And if you have many singlets which doesn't solidify, like the example I gave you before, it is more challenging to characterize such state. It's a liquid. So there is no, it's basically featureless in terms of local correlation function. So we want to see if this type of approach using entanglement is useful for classifying liquid state of matter in condensed matter. Another thing I want to say briefly is that, okay, let me just focus on this part. So to characterize your state, what condensed matter people typically do is to measure physical quantities. And the physical quantities are typically associated with conserved quantities, like particle number, spins. There you have like conductivity or thermal conductivity, spin conductivity, and so on and so forth. But presence of conserved quantity is somewhat accidental. Like the Helm-3D physics I described yesterday, basically there's nothing conserved. So in that case, you cannot really detect your state by measuring conserved quantity. But there's one external source which is available to any system, that is geometry itself or gravity. As for the system, after the state has energy and momentum, it cannot escape gravity. So basically, I'll try to explain this point in detail later, but basically entanglement entropy can be viewed as a response to the geometry. That's why it is very versatile. It is applicable to anything. Another point of view I want to also introduce is more like a computational aspect of condensed matter theory. So in many applications, we want to look for efficient algorithms to simulate quantum systems. So knowing the degrees of entanglement or pattern of entanglement, where someone helps to invent or at least to evaluate the efficiency of algorithm you're looking. And actually, this has an implication for the first point of my motivation. Some quantum system is very hard to analyze. If it is not classical, or if it is critical, let's say, it's very difficult to analyze. But if it is the case, there is the possibility to take this computational complexity itself as a part of order parameter to classify state. Okay, so that's basically my motivation so far. But here, let me say something more concrete. So here is the just example of the use of entanglement entropy in confinement, deep confinement physics. So here, this is a lattice simulation of the entanglement entropy in pure Young-Mills theory. It's a confining field theory. And here, they're taking the, they're changing the size of region A, and they're computing basically the entanglement on a given region. If this length scale basically exceeds the length scale set by the confinement deconfinement length scale, there is a first jump. Maybe it's a little bit difficult to see, but there's a jump using error bars. So this somewhat suggests that entanglement entropy is at least as useful as Wilson is, or the known non-local operator in gauge theory. Since I will introduce holographic way to calculate the entanglement entropy later, I just want to mention there's a way, this is actually predicted from the holographic calculation entropy. And this numerical simulation basically confirms the calculation of holographic entanglement entropy. Now, in terms of condensed matter, situation is more complicated. So in condensed matter physics, gauge theory type physics can be emergent. That means at the microscopic level, you don't know how to define Wilson loop. But even in that case, you can still define entanglement entropy. So it's probably much more advantageous. It's much more versatile than Wilson loop in that sense. This is just a slab, so we are taking the system with periodic boundary condition, but they are taking finite slice. So this L is just the width of the slice, and where in some units here they are using this Fm, it is basically some unit of lattice constant, and but here around 0.5, this is some jump. And I should say this natural derivative entropy as a function L, so there's a discontinuity. Yes, yes.
The slab I mentioned is
two-dimensional slab, but
D minus two-dimensional, it's like this basically. Mm-hmm. So you separate your system by D minus two-dimensional interface. Mm-hmm. And this is subsystem A. And they are changing the width.
So you're in a particular phase, though, and you're just studying.
That's right. So here.
And was the prediction really that there's a discontinuity? Rapid cross.
The prediction here is a discontinuity, but maybe it's in large engineering. So here there's a little bit subtle because we are in a single phase, but changing the size of the system. But hope is that there's a finite temperature transition, deconfining confinement transition, and that is more interesting transition, of course, because that is we are changing phase itself. But maybe it's more challenging in terms of computation. But these people do look at the finite temperature transition as well. But so far, it's much easier to just look at zero temperature.
So, sorry, and these holographic calculations were done when the gauge theory was on curved manifold, right? Like something on a sphere?
Yeah, exactly.
So not on a flat space?
Actually, in a flat space, they're looking, as far as I know, this is looking at a so-called ABS soliton solution. Okay, so one direction is compactified, but let's say it's not fair. Mm-hmm. So that's an example from Young-Mills theory, but I want to represent a result more in condensed matter context.
But before introducing the different results, let me briefly show you what is known quite generally. So entanglement entropy is known to show the so-called area of scaling. So here's the entanglement entropy. And we have a region here, M via switch, but that's basically the same. So there's the size of the region is characterized by the length scale L. And the entropy is basically scales as a function of area of the system. And it's divergent. And since entropy is dimensionless, there's the outer bound that cutoff coming in here. And that is the leading behavior in the area of scaling. And this, of course, reminds us the black hole entropy, which is also proportional to the area of horizon. So entropy, entanglement entropy behaves differently from the thermal entropy, where thermal entropy shows extensive scaling. So it turns out this applies to many condensed matter systems, but we also find many exceptions for the area of scaling. So first thing I'm going to show you, which is relevant later, is that the behavior of the entanglement entropy in 1+1-dimensional conformal field theory. So in terms of quantum distribution, it's just a one-dimensional system. Maybe it's like a spin chain, for example. And we artificially divide the system into 2+A and B. And there I change this system L. In that case, entropy shows logarithmic scaling in terms of this small L. So actually, the first example I gave you violates area law. Maybe it's not good example in that sense, but anyway, it's interesting because the coefficient of the logarithmic term there appears the central charge of the conformal field theory, so which is basically the label of your quantum critical point or quantum critical phase in 1+1-dimensional system, and the entanglement entropy is successful to capture the central charge in conformal field theory. There, this coefficient is completely independent of ultraviolet cutoff. That's a universal part of the scaling of entanglement entropy. So I will go on for different examples, but I always look for universal part of the entanglement entropy. This scaling is actually interesting even with boundaries. So with boundaries, the entanglement entropy scales this way. So here we again see the logarithmic scaling, but this case we have a logarithmic term. Sorry, we have a constant term which is actually represents the something called G entropy in boundary conformal field theory. So it was introduced in the context of Kondo type physics in condensed matter, and by Affleck and Ludwig. And when they introduced this quantity, I would say they don't have better understanding, doesn't have a good understanding, because there it was conjecture this is the represents some kind of degeneracy of the state, but this is a non-integer quantity. So what does it mean, the non-integer degeneracy? But it turns out this Affleck Ludwig entropy does actually is a part of entanglement entropy. So boundary entropy turns out to be after entanglement entropy.
Is it a coupling to the boundary?
It's for a given boundary state. So in the work, we have a conformal field theory, and we can consider conformally invariant state boundary condition, boundary state, which is located here, which is like physically, it's like a spin, singularity in Kondo physics, and the boundary entropy is basically overlap of the given boundary state with some reference state. And in quantum type physics, bulk is doing nothing. It's a critical state. It's a matter.
But something happening at the boundary, and you wanna classify what is happening at the boundary. And okay, so it is something like a central charge for the boundary critical phenomena. And Affleck and Rudick are led to define this quantity, hoping that this shows like C theorem type behavior. But at that point, it was formal definition. But I just want to try to say that in this end context, this mysterious quantity is finally understood as an entanglement. Now I'm going to go on for different, maybe higher dimensional systems. So I spend a lot of time explaining topological insulators and topological phases in those two seminars. And here is the behavior of entanglement entropy in topological phases in condensed matter. So here, again, here in this case, we have an area of behavior to the leading order, but there is a constant term coming in, and this part is universal because changing cutoff A here doesn't change this part. Now, this constant term has actually a very interesting information. So this B is if you decompose this in terms of particle, quasi-particle type, this B is a sum, basically a sum of quasi-particle type, like Lattice quasi-particles, with associated degeneracy. So for fractional quantum Hall state, at fitting fraction 1 over Q, this is log square root of Q, and for other topological order the phases, you get different numbers. So this again means entropy is successful to labeling different topological phases in super one dimension. There are other scarings. I want to also mention this. For example, there's the other critical point than conformal field theory in condensed matter, which is the quantum critical point with non-relativistic scaling. So here the dynamical exponent, which relates time and length scaling, which is not one. But in that case, you have a different scaling, and there's another universal number coming in here. And for free fermion systems, it's a system with free fermion, but with finite fermion surface. In that case, entanglement entropy shows, actually violates the area law. So somehow free fermions turns out to be very entangled state of matter. Now, what is all surprising here is that there are some parts in the scaling of entanglement entropy which is universal, and from which we learn a lot about the system. Or grant the wave function. For example, what I found surprising personally is that this result. So this is, remember, entropy is defined solely in terms of wave function. So it's a grand state wave function. But yet, it knows about the excitation you can build on the grand state. It's a Laughlin quasi particle. Usually, one would think I need Hamiltonian to generate excitation, but for topological type excitation, all we need is actually just a ground state wave function, not the Hamiltonian. Okay, so since I spend a lot of time explaining topological insulator, let me briefly show you the scaling in topological insulator. So this case, I took topological superconductor, actually. It's, I didn't write anything in detail, but it's a P plus IP wave superconductor, which is topological in the sense I described maybe in the first day. And I took a two-dimensional system with periodic boundary condition, and I simply divide my system into two parts like this. This case, what is interesting is the scaling. What is interesting, the entanglement entropy spectrum. So here I'm showing the energy, single particle energy spectrum of the real system in the presence of edges. So here I'm in the topologically trivial phase. There's a gap and there's nothing. But with boundary, I see boundary state, which kind of the definition of topological insulator. Now, the question is, can we detect the difference of these two states by looking at the entanglement entropy? Here, I'm plotting the entanglement entropy spectrum. So there are many eigenvalues, but and there's some quantum number labeling, but let's not worry about that. So entanglement entropy spectrum here is completely gapped, but there's a gapless eigenvalues in entanglement entropy spectrum. If the topological, if the insulator is in a topologically non-trivial sector, so somehow entanglement entropy spectrum knows about edge state, although we are not creating a real edge. It's just an artificial partition. So the point I want to make here is that probably it is advantageous because since the edge state is something characteristic to the topological insulator, one would say, okay, why don't you create edges? But it requires additional calculation. So and there's always a question how you make the edges. And once you actually create a boundary, you do translation invariance. That means it's computationally more challenging. But here, I got my ground state part without partition. So system is partially translation invariant, but then I take just a partial trace. So I don't have to break canvas asymmetry this way. So, yes.
What do you mean by the spectrum?
So entanglement entropy can be decomposed into many numbers. So it's a trace A log A log A. Log A. But if you take some basis, there's a coefficient coming in the extension of various density matrix, and basically it's just entropy of this property. Now, that's entropy, but I want to look at the distribution of this property. That's basically entropy spectrum. And to be more precise, what I was showing is a single particle entropy spectrum, but that's on the technical reason. Sure.
Capital G, it can be the same for completely different states, right?
Capital G.
Well, this you defined entanglement entropy as log of capital G, right? And you gave examples for, let's say, Z2 liquid and fraction.
Okay.
So I'm saying that G can be the same for completely different states, right?
That's still true because it's not completely resolved.
Right. So you, let's say if you take bosonic quantum Hall state of finite factor one quarter,
yes,
it's going to
yes.
be the same as Z2.
Yes, exactly.
So it doesn't uniquely specify.
Yeah. So here is the interesting question. Can we get more information by looking at different quantities? And that is not solved yet completely. For example, our associate Hammer here, he was looking at Lenny entropy. That's a different measure of entropy. But it turns out, actually, this doesn't, by looking at this quantity, we don't get more information. So looking at more, looking at different quantity which actually dissolve different quasi particle type is an interesting question. Okay, so up to this point, basically, I think I succeeded in convincing you that entropy is reasonably interesting quantity. But there is a difficulty in computing entanglement entropy in interacting quantum field theories and many body systems. The reason is exactly that entropy is a non-local quantity. And it's useful, but it's very difficult to compute. So I'm going to show you what the idea of holography can say something about that.
But before showing how we compute entropy holographically, I just want to show you why it's so difficult to compute entropy in quantum theory. So let me just formulate how we compute entropy in quantum theory. So in quantum theory, ground state can be obtained by fixing the field configuration at time slice, let's say equals zero, and integrate over other region with the passing through. So to get the ground state wave functional for region A, I do the path integral from, let's say, minus infinity to zero by fixing the value of field configuration on region A here. And just to compute reduced density matrix, it's just like a product of two ground state wave functions because it's a pure state. So basically, to get reduced density matrix for region A with matrix element phi plus and phi minus, we fix field configuration here and here, and they are infinitesimally separated, but do the path integral on everywhere else. So this is a delta function implementing what I said. And I take n moments of the reduced density matrix. So there's a simple way to do this. Just duplicate this n times. So I have n seat. And for each seat, I have a reduced density matrix. But by taking trace, I identify field configuration on one seat and field configuration on the other seat. So it's schematically like this. I have many copies. Each represents single power of reduced density matrix. But we now solve these cuts together. So if I do that, I basically looking at the quantum field theory in a spatial space. So it is a quantum field theory defined on a space with many slits or many cuts. And as I can see from here, if you do a round trip around one cut, you are more angled than 2 pi. So that means there'll be a deficit or opposite of deficit angle in this space. So it's a quantum field theory on the singular curve space. Finally, if I get this trace of low n, there's a nice way to compute a log of low. I mean, basically low log low. But the log of low is difficult to compute. So we want to take a limit. First compute this for finite n, but do the differentiation and send n to be 1. That's what we want to do. So let me just illustrate how it works for conformal field theory, which is relevant later. So in conformal field theory, I want to see the scaling of the entanglement entropy for a given region. And the changing scale in conformal field theory can be done by wire scaling. So changing scale can be done by first changing a metric and specializing to the wireless scaling. But in doing so, not surprisingly, we pull out the expectation value of a stress tensor because this is something which couples to the metric. Now, this is the expression for the derivative of entropy, which is written in terms of trace of stress tensor on the manifold I described. It has many slits. And in two-dimensional conformal field theory, the expectation value of T is it shows it basically quantum mechanically violates scale invariance. So it's not zero, but there's the number coming in here. It's a central charge. So basically, it's kind of measure the sensitivity to the metric. And this directory implies that the scaling of entanglement entropy, which I introduced before. The same calculation can be repeated for even dimensional conformal field theories, like four dimensional conformal field theories. There, the trace of T behaves somewhat differently, but nevertheless, you can get the scaling of entropy. Because it's a derivative, we are looking at the derivative, there's a term we couldn't derive, but for universal part, for example, this coefficient gamma 2, it is the combination of these numbers, which are universal number, intrinsic number from a given conformal field theory. There's the obvious question, sorry.
The numerical factors.
Yes.
You've got L d by dl of SA is,
yes,
is something involved. So how do I go to the next line?
This one basically comes from this one.
No, sorry, on the same slide. Go back to that slide. Yeah, I've got a 1 over 2 pi d by dn.
This one?
Yeah, so do you actually compute that, the last bracket?
Yeah, we actually compute this part. But this term, so this part is basically this part, but mm-hmm. if it is on T1, there's no singularity, mm-hmm. so you can drop this term.
Right.
So we want to pick up the term that survives the limit, which is basically the first term in this expression. And this is basically the expectation value T on the manifold with many slits.
And how do you calculate that?
I rely on the old knowledge. So T mu mu, the expectation value of T mu mu,
right,
on the given manifold is known to proportional to the curvature in 2+1 two-dimensional conformal field theory. So we just input this knowledge.
I see.
And
so basically you're saying R is such that the excess angle is 2 pi?
Yes, yes. Okay. This, yeah, exactly. So okay. There I have to input
you do
the geometry of MM. Yes. Yeah. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. And same happens here. So this is a wide tensor, and this is a dual of curvature tensor. If you expand, you get a curvature term. Or the other term doesn't show any singularity, but the curvature picks up this deficit angle, which eventually give rise to this condition.
So the A in your formula there is a cutoff, not the A that is appearing in the
entropy. This A?
Mm-hmm. Arbitrary integration constant.
Yeah, exactly.
But you have two A's different place, right? A is a normally coefficient and A is unique.
That's unfortunate because some conventional this is called A. And okay, for me, ultraviolet is lattice constant, so it's okay, but sorry, it's a different.
Yeah, so the gamma 1 and gamma 2 are functions of the C and A in that expression.
Yes.
But that A there is not the
other. Yeah, sorry for the confusion.
So gamma, do you remember what the formula for gamma is?
Yes, then I have to remember the expansion. I forgot that. So basically, if you expand, it there's a term proportional to R squared, and I don't remember the coefficient, but it's just a simple combination, linear combination of C plus A. So expand, you get R squared,
right,
you plug,
okay,
and that's
Now, gamma 1 is a function of C and A, the central charges as well. So it has a flavor of being universal, but you were saying that's not an interesting number?
Because if I change A, I distinct gamma, so I'm not interested in this.
But what's the physical interpretation of A, in some sense? It's got to be a scale of something.
Yeah, that's actually maybe people here know better than me. It's a central charge, so it's basically.
No, I meant the A in the.
Sorry.
The other A.
Yeah, this is the ultraviolet cutoff. Entropy is usually divergent, and if it shows scaling, it got to be. I mean, if this is a function of F, SA is dimensionless, so that's. Okay, that's the best explanation I can think of now, but far from physical. But yeah, I need A.
Yeah. The ultraviolet, it's an ultraviolet cutoff there? No.
Yes, it's a ultraviolet. I mean, if you compute. Yeah, so it takes lattice model like we do in condensed matter. So when we compute this number, it is basically set by lattice constant. And of course, if you change your model a little bit, it changes ultraviolet cutoff simultaneously, so you get different columns and for the entropy as a function of F, but we always extract any version. Okay, so let me show you.
Okay, so I didn't say, but okay, this computation, I believe, can be continued for higher dimension, if space-time dimension is even dimensional. But for odd dimensional conformal field series, there's no central charge, so at least entropy cannot be computed this way. So there'd be a difficulty, but it turns out it doesn't mean there's no interesting behavior in odd dimensional conformal field series.
I mean, other than observing that there's no central charge, can you point at the derivation up there and say something is wrong?
Yeah, that's something I don't know. I think something must go wrong because if I take this literally, that means
right.
Vanishing the central charge. But I don't know. One thing I can think of is that why this theory here is probably not phase-free representing, just changing the this region, which is kind of insensitive when you're extracting these log terms. But, okay, so
that's basically my motivation, one motivation. How do you compute how do you compute entropy in odd dimensional conformal field series? And how do they scale? Now we know there's the particularly nice way to analyze conformal field series. That is the ADS-CFT correspondence that I learned from string theorists. So I don't say much about this correspondence, but just let me just show you this picture. So at the boundary, so I have a D plus two-dimensional bulk, and there's a boundary where D plus one dimensional conformal field theory lived. And this additional direction basically represents a scale, RG scale of the conformal field theory. Now, the claim is that anything you want to compute at the boundary, you can compute from the D plus two dimensional bulk, but there's the applicability of these two approaches from boundary and approach from the bulk, they have a complementary region of applicability in terms of coupling. So then we wonder, since we know how to compute correlation function in ADS-CFT, how do we compute entanglement entropy holographically? So the basic claim is very, very simple. Take D plus one dimensional conformal field theory. I divide my region into A and B. I focus on this region. So how do we compute entropy? So basically, our claim is that let's extend this boundary to the bulk. And in the bulk, there is the minimal area surface which has a support of this region as a boundary as a support. Then entropy is basically given by the similar formula as the Bekenstein-Fokin formula. So here in the denominator, it's area of minimal surface instead of horizon. And it is normalized by 4 g Newton in the bulk. So there's two ways basically to understand how this works. One is very intuitive. So let's take this picture. So I have this conformal field theory living on the boundary, and inside this circle I have a D plus two dimensional bulk. Now I divide my system into two parts, A and B. And imagine you are living outside of this region. You take the partial trace. But then once you take the partial trace, you don't see anything inside. Since you can't see anything inside, luckily it is like a black hole. So you want to compute entropy. So if you trace out this part, your reduced density matrix becomes some reduced density matrix. It's a mixed state density matrix. And to compute the entropy of the mixed state density of entropy of the mixed state reduced density matrix is like the density matrix in the thermal state. So you want to compute the entropy of the reduced density matrix. But there, we can use Bekenstein-Hawking idea. Only question is how we determine the horizon. But there, our claim is it is natural to choose area of minimum surface. Now, there's more formal way, although it's not so rigorous, to show, to understand this result. So since I explained how we understand the calculation of entropy in the field theory side, let's take ABS CFT, and on the surface of the cylinder, I have a conformal field theory, and inside this cylinder, I have ABS. And we learn how to compute entropy at the boundary. And then we can use the bulk to boundary relation to compute entropy. So what we learned is that to compute entropy at the boundary, we have to introduce a singularity. It's a deficit angle. So let's say there's a constant, this is a constant time hypersurface, and this region is A, this region is B, let's say. And if I repeat this calculation that I showed you before, there's a deficit angle here and here. Now, to compute the partition function, which is trace, it's not a partition function, but to compute trace of the power of radius density matrix, it is basically the path integral defined on the space with cut. And there'll be a prescription from ADS-CFT to compute this path integral, which is basically the take the bulk and take bulk theory, and then it is the gravity theory. But now this gravity field must satisfy boundary condition, which has a deficit angle here. Now, how do we compute this? Basically, to compute this, since this is defined in the bulk, I have to find a metric which satisfies this boundary condition. And the natural candidate is that this deficit angle basically interpolates these two regions. So it's like in this picture, it's like a line effect connecting these two points. And basically evaluating the gravity action with this line effect, basically we reproduce this result. But here the assumption is that we don't know if this conical defect really interpolates that way. That is the assumption. But that's what we think is happening here.
So one assumption is that this basically extends, so it's like this. It's just we are just one dimension in delta function, so it's like this. Delta function singularity in the curvature, which is maybe 2 pi 1 minus n. So at the boundary, this is a delta function like this, and the assumption is that there's some hypercurrent connecting this one. Now, to choose the shape of this hypersurface, we basically minimize the supergravity action. Then it represents the area of minimal area. That's how we think about that. But of course, there's an assumption. Now, let me show you if this is correct or not. So for let me first test this idea in 1 plus 1 dimensional conformal fields. So we take D to be 1, so it's ADS3 slash CFD2. And in that case, minimal surface that I mentioned is just a geodesic. So basically, we computed the length of geodesics, and it gives me actually precisely this known formula in the field theory side, where I have to identify the central charge as by in terms of radius of the bulk space and the neutral constant. The same calculation also reproduces the result for the finite system, where L is not infinity, L is the finite length of the system. It is also actually interesting how it works at finite temperature. So to get a finite temperature conformal field theory, we need to put a black hole, which basically heats up the theory at the boundary. Now, if we apply this idea to the geometry with black hole, it turns out the main difference is that without a black hole, the minimal surface to do, basically it doesn't feel anything here. But if I have black hole, it must partially lap the horizon of black hole. So entropy, entanglement entropy is not extensive at zero temperature, but entanglement entropy at finite temperature has some extensive part. And this extensive part in the holographic interpretation comes from the fact that this minimal curve geodesic must sweep the part of horizon. There's also a nice way to understand one property of the entanglement entropy at finite temperature. So entanglement entropy at zero temperature satisfies this relation. So you want to look at entanglement entropy for region A, but it turns out it is equivalent to the entropy of the complementary region. That's the equivalent, but this is not true at finite temperature. So is it possible to see that in the holographic setting? Now, with horizon, we can draw a minimal curve, which is for gamma A, which is for region A, this looks like this. But for region A, it's kind of bent this way. So now two minimal surfaces are not equivalent. At zero temperature, minimal surfaces, geodesic for region A and B are equivalent. That is the reason why we get this equality. But at finite temperature, we want to draw the picture like this. So clearly, the lengths of two geodesics are different. And that's basically the reason why we don't see this equality at finite temperature. Now I'm going to extend this to higher dimensions.
In CFT2, there were two additional terms. Is there any hope of recovering it in invariant
two-dimensional CFT?
Right, there are C prime, and then there was a log G term.
That's right. Here, I'm not considering the CFT with boundary, so that's why we don't see it. But I think it's going to be done. But I'm not sure. So now, since we have a test and we have a reasonable agreement, and I have an exact agreement, so let me go on. So this is a generic formula
for the scaling of entanglement entropy in D plus one dimensional conformal field theory. So we distinguish two cases. One is these odd, so D plus one is even. So this case, we know. It's an even dimensional conformal field. But this case, D plus one is odd, and we have this expansion. And well, there are interesting features. So this power, it always decreases. It always gives two powers as you go on the expansion. And these two parts, Q, number Q, for p plus 1 even dimensional conformal field theory. This number p sub d for odd dimensional conformal field theory, there the number feature insensitive to the least scaling of the ultraviolet couple. So we claim that these two numbers are actually it turns out these two numbers are universal, not just universal, but it is also conformal invariant. So you want to change the shape of this system, but as far as two system regions, two different regions can be mapped by conformal transformation, you don't change this number. So this suggests that even for odd dimensional conformal field theory, there's a universal number appearing, and this might play the role of central charge in odd dimensional conformal field theory.
Numbers, it depends on microscopic parameters of the series. If I go from one CFT to another, the number will change.
Yes, yes. If you change the CFT, it changes.
Right. So from this perspective, it's not universal. It's different for different microscopic CFTs.
That's right. But for given CFT, it doesn't depend on microscopic reading. That's what I mean.
Oh, it does. It depends on the central charges, right? I'm just saying that that number, you know, you have your quantum field theory, it has a bunch of microscopic parameters.
Right.
And so those numbers that you are saying, they are stable against three scales of A, and those numbers are determined by microscopic parameters of a given field theory.
Sure, sure.
So that's why I don't understand the word universal in this context.
For example, the parameter I don't want to have in this type of scaling is like a velocity. For example, in 1 plus 1 dimensional quantum system, if it is at a critical point, it has a definite center charge at a given quantum critical point. But it also depends on different microscopic parameters like velocity of the propagation. And actually, it was one reason why it was not so successful determining central charge in 1 plus 1 dimensional condensed matter system in numerical, because two numbers entering. But if you want to look for central charge alone, you don't want the other garbages.
But those are static quantities, so.
Right, but there's still the velocity parameter appearing. So that kind of has an advantage over other quantities if you want to know the central charge. And that is kind of a label of your quantum critical point. So that's what I mean by universal. So, since I'm running out of time, this can be repeated for the massive deformation that the script is.
Can you just comment in that case? So, in the conformal case, you gave an argument why those numbers are stable with respect to how exactly what is the shape of a partition and things like that.
Oh.
Now, when you have additional parameters, would you expect still that to be the case? So those numbers will be independent exactly how you do partitioning?
Yeah, so there's one assumption I didn't say. So this shape of A should have zero extrinsic curvature. But under this assumption, actually that's not our work, but there's the people who looked at this problem in different contexts, that is Mitten and somebody. So. But they looked at this differential geometric problem, and they showed that's conformal invariant. So it is also interesting to look at the specific
correspondence. That is correspondence between super Young-Mills theory in four dimensions and S5. And in that case, I'm taking this partition, this case, so it's an infinite strip, which is, for technical reason, it's easier to compute. And there, entropy scales like this. and there's the area of term, and there there's the additional term which is independent of the cutoff, and this number we compute from the holography is a universal number. In future, if you want to see precise proof of correspondence or support for the correspondence, it is a good idea to look for this number in theory. Just for the comparison, I can compute this number at zero coupling. That can be done. In that case, this number is 0. Something like this. It's this number, but this is a number for different coupling constants. So there's disagreement, but since we are looking at different parameter region, I don't see it's a problem. But there's something similar in the comparison of the summer entropy in the gravity side and in CFD side. Okay, so I'm basically done. So I showed you many different scaling behavior of entanglement entropy in gap systems in conformal field series. And it seems entropy is quite capable of capturing the universal information of different phases of matter. But people in condensed matter just started to making use of this entanglement entropy ideas in many body systems. So I hope there will be more developments. For example, if we can distinguish different particle types by looking at different quantum, different entropy measure, that'd be great. One specific thing I'm also interested in is that, is there any way to compute a topological entropy holographically? That's log D term I mentioned. And hopefully many other systems, as far as we can extend the idea of holography, it is always interesting to look at the scaling of entanglement entropy, both in the field theory side and in the gravity side. So probably more things are coming. That's all. Thank you.
We have time for a few questions.
What does gravity do of the holographic insulator?
That's a very good question. I don't know.
Do you know any example of a real condensed matter system which has a gravity group?
Fermi-size. Okay, maybe not. Okay, let's see. Which one has a duality? How about Big 6 point? Oh no, maybe this is too cool. Yeah, if you have any good theorem, let me know.
So since entanglement entropy depends on the UV cutoff, right? And so you have these coefficients. So just from a very naive perspective, wouldn't it be so one thing it would suggest that entanglement entropy is not well defined physical quantity. It depends on I guess how you cause granular system and stuff like that. But then maybe is it completely stupid to think in terms of maybe some renormalization? Thinking, rather than saying that those coefficients are fixed, rather assigning them, some things that you've been mentioning, for example, gamma 1 should scale in a particular way when you rescale.
Yes, that's a very good point, actually. So I want to mention two things. So one might not want to have a UV dependence on your quantity. In that case, sometimes you can cook up a way to subtract this term. For example, for this specific case, what people can do is to, for example, take some region. So this is, there's a whole region, but take some disk region in 2+1 dimension. It's a two-dimensional system. And take three regions and take some combination. I mean, it's some combination. Something like this. If you take proper combination, it cancels out the area or term. And by here, I'm taking some outer bound cutoff, but it doesn't show up in this expression. This picks up only the universal part. So I'm not sure if this can be done for all cases, but sometimes it is possible to define new weak independent quantity. Now, in terms of the making use of the outer bound cutoff, that's precisely what people want to do, for example, in the regime of simulating quantum systems. So there, you wanna take some state and you compare your state to the true ground state, for example. But in doing so, what people can do is, well, roughly simulate different things part by part and kind of estimate, and you make your system kind of improve your ground state wave function iteratively. In that case, the idea that as you do this iteration, your system flows into the fixed point of some ground state wave function, which is a representative wave function on a given system. Basically people trying to see if it works well for different systems with different messages and so on and so forth. And there is a very direct way to actually derive CSRM just by looking at the entropy. Because entropy is related to the central charge. And we know that central charge means C function. It is away from the critical point. We know how it flows, basically, the irreversibility. But this can be actually proved just by looking at the scaling of entropy. So there's some further developments in terms of RG, in terms of doing RG in the entanglement entropy.
Are there other questions?